This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Ready or Not is brought to you by Mama Miller, the modern leak-proof nursing brand that has quickly become a wardrobe staple in my postpartum and return to paid work journey. In fact, wardrobe staple doesn't even cut it. I live in my Mama Miller pieces, and I'll tell you why later in the show. Oprah Winfrey, George Clooney, Tom Cruise, John Travolta. When I tell you that today's guest has interviewed the stars, we're not talking about any old bit player from Home and Away. And while that may sound like a pretty spectacular way to spend your working days, Renee Barge would have given it all up for the one thing that she wanted her entire life, a baby. After spending a decade from her mid-20s to her mid-30s working in TV in LA, the pandemic was the final push she needed to come home to Australian shores. Fast forward to today, and the award-winning TV host is preparing to bring her second baby into the world. Now, I couldn't help but ask about all of those golden days in TV in LA, but we get deeper than that too, and Renee is so real and raw. Here, we talk returning to work and a red carpet at 3 months postpartum when she really, with hindsight, didn't feel ready. The ways in which motherhood was harder than she expected when she thought she was the most prepared person for the job, and how she's navigated hyperemesis as someone whose job it is to look and act presentable at work. From LA to back home, from a robe to a red carpet with Tom Cruise, from presenting on air to trying not to throw up backstage, Renee brings such a human element to a world that we often paint as shiny, and peels back the curtain on what it's really like to be a mum in her line of work. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is the raw and relatable Renee Barge. Renee, I find what you do fascinating because when you show up to work, there's nowhere to hide, as you were just telling me before we hit record. I have two questions I want to lead with. First, what did you realise that you hadn't in your pre-motherhood life thought about when you returned to work yourself and thought about all those mothers that work in the same industry as you that came before you? What moments did you have of, wow, I did not realise what she was going through?
So many and all of it. And the first thing I thought was, why didn't they complain more? Why didn't I hear anybody complaining? And why did they all make it look so easy? And then I realized that when you're not going through, you're not having a similar experience to somebody, you're not being told about it. Because why would my friend who are returning to work after having babies come to me to vent and talk about it when I've not experienced it and I can't really understand it? I can empathize and I think I can understand it. But as you would know, until you've actually experienced it yourself, you have no idea. Same as childbirth, same as all of it. Like, I thought I knew. I had nieces, I had goddaughters and godsons and so many kids in my life. I thought I was so prepared and I was so far from it. I don't think I realized how scary it would be. My first job back, I was 3 months postpartum and I wanted to take a longer than that. My plan was 6 to 12 months before doing anything. Financially, that wasn't really viable. So I kind of knew something would happen. But at about the 3 month mark, I got a call up from Tom Cruise's camp to come host Mission Impossible for him and interview him at that. And I just felt like I've been back in Australia for 3 years. These are the kind of things I did in America a lot, but these opportunities don't happen here. He might not be in Australia for another 5 years. I've got to take it. I've got to do it. And I so was not ready. I was so anxious. I was so emotional. I was so scared to leave tied, even though it was for a few hours. And the other piece of all of it too, for my job in particular, is the vanity piece, like the physical piece of it, that I didn't think about what I would wear because I'd just been living in track pants and a robe for 3 months covered in vomit. And I hadn't looked in the mirror and I didn't care. Like, genuinely, I did not care what I looked like. But then it comes to this, oh, you're going to be on a red carpet interviewing Tom Cruise. And I was like, nothing fits. I've never had these big engorged boobs before. Never had boobs in general, really. And so it was like, it sounds so silly, but I think a lot of women would would understand that, you know, there is that part where you just don't recognize yourself, your body.
I think that is so fair. And that's something I was quite interested in when you said that you did take this job. So I'll stay with that while we're here. How did you actually feel just that moment before stepping onto that red carpet to take what is no small project? I love that the offer you couldn't refuse is working with Tom Cruise, because my version of that is much more every day.
I mean, it's all like relative, right? But I was very aware that that was a big deal. And those things don't happen very often, which is, you know, why I said I felt I really had to do it and wanted to, because I love interviewing Tom. He's an incredible talent. He's a gracious, great man. I hadn't seen him in ages. So yeah. And you know, there's that part of my industry too, where you want to stay relevant and you want to be asked to do these things. You can only say no so many times. So to answer your question though, how I felt, really uncomfortable. Thankfully, I had an amazing stylist and she had brought all these options, and what we thought I was going to wear, when we put it on, it was tight in all the wrong places. My boobs just looked too big. I was so uncomfortable. And then we just ended up last minute throwing on like a big oversized blazer, like a loose dress and a pair of heels. The worst part of all of it was the fucking heels. I was like, I couldn't stop thinking about my feet and I was in so much pain. And I've worn heels for years of my life. Never have I thought, oh, they're so comfortable, I could run a marathon. But never have I been like, this is excruciating. So that's all I could think about, is how uncomfortable I felt. And I missed my baby. I kept, like, any moment I got, I would message my partner, who thankfully he was with him. And they were like an hour, not even an hour, they were a few minutes away in a hotel room. So it's so close. But the whole time I was just like, is he okay? What's he doing now? Has he had his nap? Like, I could not disconnect in that way. And of course, like, my boobs were screaming because I was, you know, 3 months, he was feeding a lot at that point. And this was a couple of hours. And yeah, I would say the main word that comes to mind is just uncomfortable.
Yeah, that is so beautifully shared, because it speaks so much to just how fraught the feelings can be in returning to work or leaving your baby in the early days. So you've had a very colourful career. I would love you to walk us through. Renee finishes school, she goes off into the world, maybe graduates from uni, maybe doesn't. What does your career life look like for those years pre-motherhood?
Okay. I often feel like a cat who's had 9 lives when I talk about my career, because it really has just kind of snowballed in all these different ways and not the way I thought. I grew up wanting to be a dancer. Dance was my passion, and I would watch music videos and be like, I'm going to be dancing for Janet Jackson. I want to be dancing for Michael Jackson. Like, that was my dream. I grew up in the hills behind Byron Bay in the hinterland. So there wasn't, like, people weren't really leaving that much, especially to do things like what I wanted to do. So I always felt like my dreams were kind of a little bit too big and out there. I didn't go to uni, much to my parents' disappointment. But I went to Brent Street instead. So I came to Sydney and I went to a place called Brent Street Performing Arts, and I did a year of full-time performing arts and absolutely loved it. I was just dancing every day. It was my dream, and thankfully came out of that, got an agent straight away and started working as a dancer. I really wasn't that good. I just loved it. And I was a good performer. I will say that I was a good performer, but technically I was never a great dancer. So I kind of reached like the limit I could probably reach in Australia. And I was doing a lot of gigs and working a ton. But the main thing I started earning most of my money from was booking commercials. So that was kind of my little stepstone into television. And I was booking so many of them that my agent was like, oh, maybe we should get you into acting. And so I went for an acting audition and I absolutely tanked. I was so bad, like atrocious. In fairness, the role was like such a departure from who I am in everyday life. I was playing this like teenage girl who like had this really hard life, like nothing that I personally could relate to. Not that you have to be able to, but yeah. Anyway, I'm not an actor.
But you've been thrown into the deep end.
No deep. Like, you know, I could have been playing like some, you know, girl next door, like, you know, whatever, something that might be a little easier, a little more attainable for me. But anyway, I was so bad. And the casting director called my agent, was like, yeah, no, she's a no. But we really love chatting to her in between the audition. Like, she's great on camera and she's very comfortable being herself, kind of thing. So maybe she should do hosting. And my agent was like, have you ever thought about that? And I was like, yeah, I grew up watching Getaway. That was like my other dream, but that felt so unattainable. So kind of let go of that. And they were like, oh, well, let's send you to some auditions and see how you go. I went to an audition for a game show, which no one would remember, but it was called National Bingo Night on Channel 7.
Okay, I was going to say I probably will remember it, but I have to admit to you that I don't.
No, I think there was one and for good reason. But basically, I was the ball girl. It's so funny. Like, I don't know why they even auditioned me, because all I did was like pull out these balls and say these numbers. So embarrassing. But it was my first gig in TV. And from there, I picked up a surfing show, which I lied to get onto, said I was a great surfer. And I booked this like amazing travel surfing show that went all around the world. And then while I was shooting that, I booked Channel V. And Channel V was like the dream. I was obsessed at the time. You know, I loved Yumi and Andrew G and James Matheson. And
that was a real moment in time, wasn't it?
Honest, it was. And I really miss those days. So that was like such an honor to get that job. And I worked there for 2 years covering music festivals and all of that. I still was very green at the time, but I went over to LA because my then boyfriend was dancing for Michael Jackson. He was a dancer as well. And so went over there and took some meetings, not really ever wanting to move to Los Angeles, not ever thinking that that was not on the cards at all. But I did get an offer actually at E! News and at Extra. And so I came back. The offers weren't set in stone. They were kind of just like, you know, loose, we'll see kind of what happens while we're trying to work out the visa situation. And while I was back in Australia, Extra called and said, look, we've got John Travolta's in town. He is going to do some interviews. We'd love to send you. And depending how it goes, then we can work out what your contract and what your offer is going to be. So I went and interviewed John Travolta, and he was just so divine. And he was having a baby. His wife was having a baby within days. And I just like very innocently asked him, oh, what are you thinking of calling the baby? And he said, Benjamin, what do you think of that? And I was like, oh, that's a beautiful name, blah, blah, blah. Didn't think anything of it. The next day, it's like all these articles, breaking news, John Travolta reveals baby name, blah, blah, blah. In my mind, I didn't study journalism. Like I didn't know what I was doing. I got all these calls and messages, and Extra essentially were like, that went so well. You broke news. Like, we'd love to offer you a proper weekend show co-hosting role, blah, blah, blah. So then I essentially just, yeah, flew to LA. And a few years turned into another few years, another few years. And I ended up moving up. I started as the weekend show co-host at Extra alongside Mario Lopez, AC Slater.
Amazing.
And then ended up being the Daily Show co-host and a correspondent as well. And I ended up being there for 10 years, which is crazy. So from 24 to, I was 35 when I moved back.
I have so many follow-up questions, but my first two are, who is the most incredible person that you ever interviewed? And what was it like to be an Australian working in that industry in LA? Because you're basically at the epicenter of all things pop culture. Like, that must have just been wild.
Wild is definitely the word. I think there's something really magical about being Australian in a lot of ways. But back then, there weren't any Aussies on TV. There was Aussie actors, obviously. We had, at that point, it was like Hugh Jackman, Nicole Kidman. But in terms of television hosts, there weren't anyone on any of the networks with an Australian accent. So I was like very different to them. I was so, you know, what's the word? Like, oh, baby brain. Anyway.
Like it was a fish out of water.
Yes. Very unique in that sense. But also the thing that came with it, I think, for me personally, was that this was a whole crazy world that I'd not grown up in or not really been obsessed with either. I wasn't obsessed with pop culture or anything, that I was just coming into it as this like naive, innocent person who is like genuinely interested in who these people are as people and getting to know them and just seeing them as people and having conversations with them and not being like stars in my eyes, like I need to be best friends with these people. I don't know. I think there was something really cool about that. And then also the Australian accent, I realized very quickly, lets you get away with a lot. Yeah. They think that you're like being really cheeky or funny all the time or like endearing. And you're like, oh, this is how I sound. Like I could ask a question that someone down the carpet just asked, but for some reason they answered it when I asked it because it sounded nice or something.
Love that. We're not a threatening.
Yes.
People don't find us threatening for some reason.
Totally. I think they just think we're constantly taking the piss, which we kind of are. And I remember having moments like that where they were like, are you taking the piss? And I was like, yeah, kind of. Like it's that sarcastic, you know, kind of, I don't know. Yeah. So there's, yeah, I would say that's how it felt. And I think that's why I lasted so long and I didn't get caught up in all of the other stuff because I did just see it as a job and something that I loved doing and became really passionate about as I went on. But I wasn't obsessed with that world, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And so Well, actually, no, I have to stick to who was the best person you ever interviewed, I keep going.
That's a hard one. That's really hard to answer. I've got a few for different reasons. Oprah, because obviously I grew up watching Oprah. I watched her talk show and was like, I want to be her. Yeah. I love her. I loved the way she interviewed. I just thought she was just so magnificent in what she did and so present. So the first time I got to interview her was everything I hoped for and more. And then every time I interviewed her after that, it was always amazing. And there's always something really cool about interviewing people who, you know, kind of do what we do as a job because they get it. They know exactly what you need to get. You know, they've got the sound bites ready and there's like, you don't need to prepare. And I mean, it's freaking open.
And you're not doing the hand holding. They know exactly what the sort of MO is.
Yes. And so I would say her, but then I would also say there's a couple of the OG superstars. Like John Travolta has always been so good to me and I always would credit my job to him. I was like, you got me this job. And he was always so gracious and would give me so much. But I also have to say one of my other favorites is George Clooney by far. Like he is just...
Wow, he is. If you listen to a recent Witching Hour episode, you would know that he is my ultimate forever man. I have stars in my eyes just thinking about it. I hate to turn into a celebrity crush person, but...
He's the best. He's worth your crush. He's so charming. He is the quintessential movie star. And I keep saying this because I just don't believe they exist anymore. The Brad Pitts, the George Clooneys of the world, you don't get that energy or that vibe from any of the new ones. And I will say that's not anything against them. I think the reason of that is social media and the fact that they're so, we know everything about these people and stuff. Whereas he came up at this time where there was still mystery and, you know.
But I can imagine him just having that aura around him. It would spread far and wide.
But he's kind and he's funny and he's personable and he just gets it. He gets it. So yeah, he's always one of my favorites. And I love interviewing him.
Oh, and Oprah, wow, what a journey. So how do you go from this journey to deciding I'm heading home? This is the end of this chapter. Because I imagine LA and Australia are very different places, or America and Australia. And it must feel like you are closing the door on something. How do you make that career decision or that life decision to go, I'm moving home?
That's a really good question because I actually didn't make the decision. The decision was made for me. And I think that's the only way it could have happened. I deep down was ready to come home, but I had it too good. I had a great job. I had amazing friends. Everything I wanted, except the biggest thing that I wanted, which was love and a baby, I had everything else, but COVID decided for me. So I came over to host The Voice in Australia. And while I was out here, COVID happened. Lockdowns happened. I went back to LA while we were on a production break from The Voice. And all I did was went from work to home. Our work was deemed essential services, which is crazy to me. Like hosting on Extra, I was like, oh, everyone needs to know what Kim Kardashian had for breakfast during pandemic. But in saying that, it was great because at least I had that to go to and everything. But it meant that I had to be really careful because if I brought COVID into the offices, then the whole production would shut down. And it was very different to in Australia over there, very different. It turned into, it felt like the apocalypse. It felt really grim. It was really scary. And being on my own, I was single at the time. I was living in Venice Beach. I didn't feel safe at all. And then I came back to Australia. I did 2 weeks of quarantine, the hotel quarantine, which is a whole other thing and such a wild experience to think about now. But when I came out of that to finish shooting The Voice, I just looked around and people were out in the sun and hugging and having the best time. And I had just come from the polar opposite. And I did Bondi to Bronte. And I was talking to a friend who just moved back from LA and just, she was telling me how much she loved it. And it just dawned on me. And I was just like, I can't go back there. I can't do it. I can't leave my family. I don't feel safe there. I feel so happy to be home. And yeah, I literally called my boss while I was on that walk and she completely understood and was like, if you want to come back in 6 months when this is all over, it's up to you. And I was like, I don't think I will. So yeah. I didn't even go back to LA and I've still not gone back. My friends went and packed up my apartment for me. It got sent, everything got sent over and I moved back to Byron, which was also wild to think about because I never thought I'd be living back in Byron. But during that time, it was perfect. I mean, everyone bloody moved to Byron at that time. It was just a cliche, but it was amazing and the best decision I ever made, obviously, because then it led me to meet my partner and then end up having Tide. But I just think how different my life would be had that not happened for me.
Yeah. Would you almost define that feeling as the sort of homesickness you get when you're a kid. I've always wondered that. I've done a lot of travels, but I've never lived abroad. When it's no longer feeling good and you come home, is it almost like that nervous stomach feeling of like, this doesn't feel good anymore. I have to be back here.
Totally. And it happened every time I would come home. I would cry on the plane back to LA, but then within days I'd be back into the swing and it's like a hamster in a wheel, you know, it all just would get so busy I'd forget about it. But that last time with the pandemic and how scary and unsettled everything felt, it was like my gut was screaming at me. And my parents were getting older. My sister was having babies. I just felt this real sense of I am missing out on so much. And what for? Like, I've done what I wanted to do. I've done more than what I've wanted to do. I never even set out to do this. So it's like that was just like the cherry on top that it happened. And it's just my ego keeping me over there. In fairness, I had incredible friends in LA who I still speak to every day. I was there from 24 to 35. I feel like it's the real poignant time.
That's like the real growing up, isn't it? Like you think it's your teens at that stage of your life, but now I've come to know that the last decade has been my growing up decade so far. We might have the same conversation in 10 years, but I couldn't agree more that that's like your formative years, really.
Definitely. We went through so much, so many heartbreaks and career changes and leaving families across the world. And yeah, so that was really, that was the hardest part. But leaving LA and the industry, that wasn't hard because I was so burnt out. Americans work like crazy.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because we think of Australians as hard workers. I think we've got the work-life balance thing better sorted, but we are hard workers. But Americans are another level, aren't they?
Yeah, but it is that thing of like we work to live, we don't live to work. And I found the opposite in the States. And I felt like I was a doctor on call that doesn't save lives. Like they would email or text at any time of the night and I had to respond. And if I didn't, I had this anxiety. My agents would get back to me at 10 or 11 o'clock at night. I was like, your family in Australia after 5 p.m., I don't hear from any of my team. Yeah. And I love that. I love that. So I think what you're saying is right. It's the balance. And that's what I really craved and missed because I had 2 weeks off a year for 10 years straight. And I would work 5 days, but usually it was 6 to 7 days as well as nights. Most days I wouldn't get home till 9 o'clock because there would be a premiere. Red carpet 2 to 3 times a week, a junket a few times a week. Weekends were always taken up by junkets. Like, yes, it was super exciting and fun and I'm so grateful, but it was a lot and my nervous system needed a real reset and I got that when I came home to Australia.
When you navigate breastfeeding and postpartum and all of the wild things that come with it, the products that really help you become your best friends. And just like your baby, you all of a sudden can't imagine your life without whatever it is that's helping you navigate parenting and paid work. And at the top of my list is Mama Miller's collection of leak-proof bras and tops. Their gorgeous, scallop-lined cami design has been a breastfeeding go-to for me, especially during the warmer months. I wore their beautifully designed singlet under a shirt wherever I went over summer, and it always made me feel less mumsy and more put together, which makes all the difference when you're sleep deprived and lactating and feeling all of the feelings in the postpartum. But the design I now gravitate to most, regardless of if I'm with Posey or not, is the leak-proof night bra. It's padded, it's gorgeous, it doesn't dig into my softer postpartum body, and I honestly feel lost without it when it's in the washing machine or not dry yet. I miss it as much as I miss Posey when she's asleep, and I wear it every single day. With so many baby and postpartum products out there, it can be hard for an expecting parent to determine what is essential and what is a nice to have. And for me, Mama Miller is at the top of my list of essentials for anyone that is planning to breastfeed. You can shop the collection now, made by a mum for mums, at mama-miller, that's MILLA.com. And so you get home. At this point, you're single. You want a baby. It seems like you've been quite busy between now and then because now your son's 18 months old and you have another one on the way. Yeah. Tell us about that journey and I guess how prevalent the thought of motherhood was for you as soon as your feet landed back on home soil.
I mean, that's a good question, but motherhood was always in the back of my mind from as early as I can remember. If I was asked what I wanted to be when I was little, it was a mum. I always wanted to be a mum first. And that was the kind of heartbreaking part of LA and what I went through there, because I went through a few really long-term relationships that just were never going down that path. And that's all I wanted. I froze my eggs when I was in LA, when I was with someone as an insurance policy, because I was thinking in my head, well, if this doesn't happen in the next few years, I'm going to do this alone. Like, that's what I was thinking. Deep down, I knew I wouldn't, but I just was like, I have to be prepared for this to be a possibility.
I want to quickly pull you up on that, because I find that really interesting, because had I not met the right partner, absolutely would have entered solo motherhood. Not saying it would have been easy. It would have been very challenging, but I would have done it. In your head, what was your cutoff age of, if I don't meet a person by this age,
I was kind of thinking 40. Like, I was probably by 40, I would do it, because I couldn't imagine a life where I wasn't a mother. That would break my heart more than anything. And in my head, in fairness, I thought until I fell pregnant, that could still be a possibility, because when I froze my eggs, I was told by multiple fertility doctors that my chances of having children naturally was very low. I had really bad endometriosis. I'd had laparoscopies. And now it's just so crazy to think about, like, what the torment I put myself through for no reason, because everything turned out amazing so far, knock on wood. I've been really lucky. But I didn't think that was going to be how it was going to go. So I always had that fear that was there. And then, when I came home, I definitely wasn't thinking, okay, right, now I'm going to find a husband and I'm going to have a baby. That wasn't the forefront at all. But I just kind of had this knowing that if it is going to happen, this is where it's going to happen. This is where I'm supposed to be.
And so with a career like yours, I would have potentially thought maybe the idea of motherhood and when to do it might have felt stressful. You've had this big, colorful career. When's the right time to enter that motherhood era? But it sounds like, because it's something you always knew you wanted and you'd had so much from your career, when the time did come, you were just fully embracing of it from that career point of view. You weren't worried.
I would have given up my career 10 years ago. I would have given up everything had I met Andrew then to have a baby. I happily would never have felt like I missed out on anything either.
Yeah.
Honestly.
So where was your career at when you fell pregnant with Tite? Where were you working, rather, is the better question.
Yeah, I was kind of still on a bit of a break. Like, when I came back, my nervous system was shot. I needed to just chill for a second. And I did that in Byron and it was heaven. And then I took on a few things here and there. I did Dancing with the Stars, which was something I'd always wanted to do. And
what a merging of your two worlds and your two passions.
Totally. It scared the absolute shit out of me, which is why I did it. And then I started doing some work for the Today Show. So they started calling up and they tried to get me in earlier, a few years prior, but I wasn't ready to leave LA at that point. And so it kind of worked out great timing wise. And I just started doing casual things for them. And I actually found out I was pregnant the day after I had my first day back on the Today Show. And it was just so funny because the same thing happened again this time when I went back. But I was just stepping into this kind of, like, it was going to only be casual anyway, so it wasn't going to be full time. So I didn't have this anxiety around the pressure of it or telling anyone like I did this last time. But yeah, I was only easing back in and I was working casually here and there. So I felt really relaxed and safe and happy about where I was at from a career standpoint. I didn't feel like I was going to be letting on anyone down or that I was going to miss out on anything. It was definitely perfect from a timing perspective, which I've only just realized now talking about.
Yeah. So your emotions were in check from that point of view, but physically you had quite a bit of sickness. We're saying now with hindsight, which we'll get to, that your second pregnancy has made that probably dull in comparison. But at the time it would have been challenging. You're having to show up as your presentable self. How did you actually navigate pregnancy alongside work?
Yeah, like the first time wasn't as bad. So I felt like I was so excited too. I didn't know what to expect. I felt like I could fake it a little better and I could just get on with it. And obviously when I'd finish on the Today Show, I would get home and just sleep. I'd get home and rest and sleep. And I had all this time and space to kind of recover. But I was nervous because I was, you know, you don't know how long the sickness is going to go for. And I remember hosting a couple of events and having to run to the bathroom to vomit in between. And this is when I was still hiding it. That's the hardest period, I think. Once you can tell people and you've got people supporting you or like producers that you're working with that know that will protect you and, you know, ask you if you need anything and all of that stuff, it makes it a lot easier. But when you're in still the phase of hiding it or keeping it to yourself, which I have a whole other train of thought about how ridiculous that can be. But yeah, that pressure definitely makes it a lot harder because, as I said, I'm a terrible actor. I'm not good at acting. So like having to show up for work and then on top of it be fake and phony and like smiling when everything feels terrible is a really hard piece of that.
Yeah. So then you eventually meet Tide. What do you remember most about the early days of motherhood?
Just how much harder it was than I thought it was going to be. Like I said, I wanted it my whole life. I really thought I was the most prepared person for the job. I also am big on research because that's been a big part of my job. So I read all the books. I did all the study I could possibly do. I was so unprepared. I just feel like looking back, it makes me sad because as much as I was like, this is my dream, and I was so and am so obsessed with him, and I was so happy being in the little baby bubble and stuff, I think it was the physical part. Like my body took a real beating through birth and my recovery was just horrible. And I think that was probably the hardest part, was just feeling physically kind of incapable in the way that I would have liked to. I was hoping to be like walking around the block with him in the pram day one, and it took weeks until I could walk around the block, you know, things like that, that I think just made it a lot harder. And the sleep, like his sleep was shocking. And I didn't know. I mean, first time, you have no idea what's normal. So there's the anxiety that comes with that. My partner had to go back to work after 2 weeks. So I felt really like when he left, I was like, ah, now what do I do? And it's so funny because now looking back and now having a toddler, like, oh my God, give me the newborn days. Like they're so easy.
100%.
Hindsight's a funny thing, isn't it? You don't know what you don't know. And I just remember thinking it was so hard and that I was so tired and I had no time for myself. And now I'm like, what was I thinking? The baby slept the whole day.
Like, it's just such a shocking change though, isn't it? It's amazing that you enter this new thing and this new responsibility after the mammoth effort of pregnancy and birth. Like, can't they just give us 2 days to relax before we then become a mom?
This is the part that blows my mind. You go in and you do essentially a marathon that you've not trained for. And then the marathon ends and most people who run a marathon, they then get like massages, recovery, sleep, great nutrition, all of these things. You might get a cheese toasty and then you're like bleeding, pissing, like you're coming out of every orifice.
Lactating.
Yeah. And you're just so tired. Like it depends how long. My labor was incredibly long. I had no sleep, projectile vomited for days. So just, I felt like I had been hit by a bus, but then it's like, oh no, 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 there's no time to rest. Like now you're up feeding and figuring all this out. And like, I remember thinking like, this is crazy that I now don't have time to recover from the biggest, most physical life event you are ever going to endure.
It's wild. They absolutely need to look into that more. These postpartum hotels that are popping up, they should be funded by the government.
I know.
We all deserve to check into them for the first few weeks of life. It's just, it's the biggest shock you'll ever go through, really, or one of the biggest. So then I want to get back to this Tom Cruise night because I really am amazed that you can pull something like that off at 3 months. For the people that looked at that and just went, wow, she just had a baby 3 months ago. Isn't this so amazing? We know that there's so much more that you went through than just being like, la, 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 la. Look at me. I look beautiful. I present well. And I'm going to give this great presentation with Tom Cruise. Obviously, a million things went through your head. Talk us through the day sort of leading into that and then how you felt the next day.
Yeah, the day leading into it definitely was nervousness, and I never get nervous to do things like this anymore, but it was on a different level. It was nervous to leave my baby, nervous because I had not done anything like this in so long. Am I going to remember, you know, full baby brain, haven't slept in 3 months. How am I going to remember like the questions? Am I going to blank when he's there? I had those thoughts, but all day I was just, as you know, as a mom, it's like the brain, a million tabs open, trying to think, like writing the lists for Andrew, like this is what he needs at this time and pumping and pumping. And oh my God, don't even get me started on pumping. I hate pumping so much. And I just remember,
arduous.
Yes. And I remember in those early days, I did not get that much milk. Like I had the wrong pump. I didn't know how to do it. It got easier. And I think the pressure came off, but I just remember it taking me like a week to get enough milk for this few hours and that doing my head in, because then I'm thinking there's something wrong and I don't produce enough milk and la, 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 la.
And not only the emotions, but it's pretty much all your spare time at that stage, because babies still feed all the time at 3 months. So it's basically you either have a pump on your boob or a baby on your boob.
You're a cow. And that's just what I felt like. I just remember being like, yeah, and that's what I didn't realize about mums, not even just returning to work, returning to social activities when you've got a baby, how much goes into leaving your baby in those early stages. Unless you have experienced it or done it, you cannot understand. And it made me feel so bad that I hadn't acknowledged that of my friends before, what they had to endure to come and meet me for a dinner. I mean, I kind of got it, but not on this level, because the anxiety, the stress, the emotions that come with not getting enough milk or this, that, and the other. And then, you know, if Andrew was like, he's screaming or he's crying, like he was pretty amazing. He wouldn't really tell me, but he'd be like, we're out on a walk. He's in the carry. And I'm like, okay, so I know he's had a hard time. Like, those kind of things. And you're just so, you're so emotional at that point too. The hormones are crazy. So I remember just being up on the stage and just feeling so uncomfortable in my shoes and being like, am I ever going to be able to wear heels again? Jimmy Choo can fuck right off, because this is so painful. I shouldn't say that. I love
can
Jimmy
like
Choo.
Feel the pain. I actually wore heels on Tuesday night. I went to a media awards, which I never go to those sorts of things, but I just happened to have one, and I've got blisters, and it's because I never wear heels anymore.
No, neither. And like, flats and sneakers are all I wear. Even if I was to go out for something social, I would never put on a pair of heels anymore if I didn't have to. And I just remember being like, this is so bad. Am I ever going to be comfortable in heels again? And it got to the point where I couldn't even feel my feet. They were so sore. And then the engorgement happened. And I remember just being like, oh my God. Thankfully, I wasn't someone who really leaked a lot. But in that moment, I was so thankful I was wearing black and I had a big black jacket, because I was like, I think I'm leaking and that my boobs are killing me. And I'm so hungry. It's like, it's been like 2 hours since I've had anything to eat. I remember turning to someone and be like, is there any snacks? I just need like a bag of chips or some lollies or something. And they were like, she's a breastfeeding mom. Let's go get her some things. And I got some lollies and chips and some water. But I just remember like, wow, this is so much harder than I thought. And I'm so not ready. And I do remember afterwards when Tom was like, oh, are you going to stay to watch the movie after I did the red carpet and then presented the film? And I was like, can't believe I said this to Tom Cruise, but I was like, I can't, I have to go. My boobs are exploding. I need to go feed my baby. And he was like, you just had a baby? And I was like, yeah, I know. It's been a while since I saw you, but I just had a baby. And he was like, oh my God, I can't believe you're here. Thank you so much for doing this. And I was like,
I can't believe I am either. That.
Yes.
I can't believe I am either. And off I go to my hotel room to be with my little baby.
Bye.
It's a relief.
Getting to him and getting to Tide and just being like, oh my gosh, like he was asleep and he was, you know, fine and everything was fine. And Andrew had the most beautiful night with him in they'd had bath time together and he was loving it because it was his first like kind of one-on-one time, quality time with the baby and all of that. But I can't really remember exactly how I felt in that moment, but I just remember waking up the next day and being like, I'm not ready. I'm not ready to do this. And
I've had so many of those moments taking on small freelance projects and going, that was too soon. Remember that for next time.
Yeah. And it's funny. And next time, maybe I'll feel different because maybe the physical part will be different. I don't know, but I just know for me, and I knew women who'd gone back way sooner than that at a full-time capacity. This was one job, one day. And I felt kind of ridiculous that it was so hard for me. I was kind of embarrassed and a bit like, what is wrong with me? Why can't I pull it together? And why can I not be away from my baby for like a few hours? But it took months and months after that until I did anything where I was away from him for more than a couple of hours. And I still would get anxiety. Honestly, I think only up until the last few months have I been able to go to work and leave him for long stretches, long periods of time, and not have that anxiety or guilt or just not want to do it. Like it was that feeling of like, I really don't want to do this, you know, but I have to. And that's only gone away in the last few months.
So we've just had Posey join us. So we'll have a little bit of an intermission there, Renee. But I think so many mums will resonate with what you said about that it can take a while to get back into the swing of things and to feel ready for it. And I completely resonate with it feeling hard in the early days to leave your baby. At some stage, you then, I think, return to the Today Show in a more, I guess, full-time or more secure capacity. Can you tell us about that experience?
Yeah. So they offered me the job, essentially, yes, full-time, but splitting it with Dickie, with Richard Wilkins, who's been there forever. And it was right. The conversations were all before I fell pregnant. So I was like so excited because I was like, this is what I've been wanting. If I'm going to do a job in Australia, this is it. Yeah. So essentially I was like, this is the job in Australia that I want. Timing wise, I want to have another baby. But like, again, this could take 6 to 12 months to fall pregnant. Who knows how long it's going to take. I'm just going to take it, go for it. And by the time I had my first day lined up in the schedule, I found out I was pregnant again the day before. And I had a
How did you feel in that moment?
Oh my gosh. So excited about being pregnant, but then instantly sick because I was like, oh my gosh, they're going to hate me. That was the first thing I thought. And that's so terrible. But the anxiety I felt about having to tell them, because I was like, this timing is crazy. We've been talking about me going into this role and doing this for a while. It's my dream. It's always what I've wanted to do. I love the team there. Everything about it just felt so good and right. But then, of course, the timing, I was just like, what am I going to do? So yeah, I built it up so much worse in my head. And I'm so glad that I was wrong about how it was all going to go down. But I was terrified to tell them.
And how did it actually play out? When did you decide to tell them? And what was the response for anyone like you that was really scared, but hopefully gets a much better outcome than they think they will?
Yeah, I think we have this idea that everyone's going to think we're this burden. And I thought they were going to feel really let down. I thought I was going to be letting them down. I did wait a little longer than I wanted to, only because I had gone to get a scan and I can't remember what week it was, whatever scan it was. She was just like, look, I think you should wait till after your NIPT to tell anyone you're high risk. You're considered high risk because of your age. Love that for me, this geriatric pregnancy. So it kind of planted this seed of anxiety that I didn't have the first time around in my pregnancy. And I don't know why I fell into it this time around. Maybe it's because I already had a little one and I know the stakes are so high and I don't know. I just felt weirdly anxious and like, I don't want to speak out of turn. I want to make sure everything feels right before I say anything. So I actually waited until I was around, I think I was 13 weeks when I told them, or bang on 12 weeks, something like that. Straight after I got my NIPT results, I told them. And the boss, he was amazing. I practiced the whole conversation. I was like so nervous and having conversations with my agent and my friends and just like, how is this going to go down? And blah, 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 and just working myself into a tizzy. And he straight away just smiled and was like, oh, congrats, mate. Like, that's so great. And I was like,
is that it? I've wasted all my energy.
Please don't hate me. Please don't hate me. He's like, what? Of course you're going to have another baby. Like, this is great news. We'll make it work. Like, how do you feel about it? Like, how are you feeling? And I was like, I'm so sick. It's been so bad. It's been so hard. Rah, rah, rah. And he was just like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Well, you know, and everyone was like, how can we support you and help you? Like, you just tell us if anything's too much. And just so beautiful and supportive. And I just felt like
we've just had a bit of a tech failure and neither of us can remember exactly which part of the sentence Renee was up to, because we're two mums that are trying to work and this is the reality of it all. But I'm so glad that you had a great experience telling your boss. Mm-hmm. What I'm not as glad about is that you've been incredibly unwell, mm-hmm. next level this time around. How on earth have you navigated work with HG and a toddler?
I haven't. I honestly, like, a lot of my friends have been amazing and they're like, you're doing it, la, la, la. And I have felt just like the biggest failure. I felt like I have been failing on every level of my life. I felt like a shit mom. I felt like a terrible TV host. I felt like a really distant partner. I felt like a shell of a human being. And I feel like I was just operating at like a one for the last few months, which is so crap. I don't know how I couldn't have gotten through it with certain friends who I have like my own little support group of friends who've had HG, and they helped so much, because I think unless, again, it's one of those things that unless you've really truly experienced that level of sickness, you can't understand and you can't offer support. And like, it's soul destroying. It really is. So I canceled a lot of work for about 2 months. I had to cancel everything because I couldn't fake it. I couldn't be in, like, I was meant to host a bunch of events and I did a couple in the early stages that were torture. As soon as there was food served, I was off to the bathroom and I would be gagging in my mouth and like, you know, having conversations with people and just having to take a second to like swallow my vomit. It's just
And like I imagine quite fancy or very corporate or very professional surroundings.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm up there like talking and just feeling like sweat. I could feel sweat because it's that feeling. And, you know, you get the saliva build up. And you're like, I'm going to puke. And someone's just brought fish into the room. And this is my worst nightmare. So I just canceled a lot of stuff. I hid. I disappeared. And that helped. And that was, I got that advice from a friend who was just like, just it'll still be there. Just take the time you need and you will hopefully feel better in a few months. So I did. And then I kind of eased back in when I could, when I started actually the medication. I started taking the medication this time around. I took the guilt and all of that away because I have a little one that I have to look up out for. And that's where I felt like I needed to show up better for him. So that's why I kind of decided to take the medication. And I'm so glad I did because it gave me my life back for the last couple of months. And I was able to go back to work and feel like a better mom as well, because there was a couple of months there where I just would lay on the floor in the fetal position and he'd run around me and I'd just be crying like, oh, I'm so sorry, baby. Like you're the one that's here and I should be playing with you and I'm growing your sister and she's not even here yet, but she's the one that's causing that, you know, like it was just this weird mental thing of just, oh, I mean, we put so much pressure on ourselves as moms. It's terrible.
And we all go through those emotions of feeling guilty to the firstborn. Did that, so that gave you that sense early. Did it also make you nervous about what it will be like when the second baby comes? I've got good news for you, but I first want to hear that.
I'm so scared. I'm really scared because Tide is still a baby. I'm still breastfeeding. You know, he's still in nappies. He's very much a baby. And I can't imagine what he's going to be like when I have another baby in my arms and he's wanting to feed or he's wanting my attention. He is very attached to me. And I think we're going through that 18-month thing where the regressions are happening. Well, progressions, depends how you want to look at it, but sleep's gone completely AWOL. And he wants to be on me constantly. And it's always me. If there's anybody else in the room, it's me that he wants. So I just can't imagine him sharing. And I constantly have this guilt about, I have these flashes forward of me holding this baby and feeding and him going, mama, mama, mama. And I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to do this? I don't know. I'm so excited and I'm so grateful that he's going to have a sibling. When I was in the depths of my HG vomiting while I was trying to bathe him and stuff, I would look at him and be like, this is for you. This is for you. No,
you're going to like this person, I promise.
You're going to have a best friend for life. My sister is my world. So I'm like so happy. But yes, that guilt, I can't believe how much I'm feeling it on so many levels. Like even thinking forward to daycare, because he hasn't been to daycare yet, but I want to send him before she comes. And just like is he going to feel like I'm shipping him off because there's another baby? And it's just constant.
I know those emotions all too well. And my husband really stepped up when I was pregnant to give me as much of a break as possible. And I would think I should be spending that time with this baby before the next one comes, but I also need to rest.
Need the break. Yes.
I was really worried because my son's quite singular. He's coming out of his shell now, but he's a bit of a lone wolf. And I thought he'd hate this baby. So for what it's worth, even though every baby is so different, he adores her. He has not wanted her to not be in the room for 1 second of her life. And I know I'm lucky because not everyone's experience is that, but hopefully that's your experience. And if nothing else, maybe just have that thought in your head because I know those guilts all too well.
Oh my gosh,
and they're very hard to turn off.
It is. It's like the second you become a mum, that mum guilt kicks in and then it's just constant and it's a cascade. Like it never stops. And you're just constantly thinking about all the ways in which you're going to ruin their life at some point, in some way, shape or form. Like I'm always thinking, oh, when he goes to therapy, it'll be because of this.
I will be the reason. Gee, we're very good at calling out our like downfalls, but not very good at calling out how we are good mums, are we?
I know. Well, because it's just, I don't know, when you're trying to do it all, it's really hard to feel like you're thriving at anything. And that's what I've felt like these last few months. I've just been surviving, not thriving. Yeah, it's hard to feel like you're thriving at anything when you're just kind of like doing a million things at like a low level, you know? And I've just been in survival mode the last few months and that's just made me, yeah, feel like kind of crap about myself because I am an overachiever and I'm used to, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it really well. But I had to just like surrender and go, this is it at the moment. this is the best I can do. This is the best I can show up. I'm not sleeping. I'm getting up at 4:30 in the morning to go be on live television. I've got my baby waking up multiple times in the night. I'm still breastfeeding. It's just like, you know, I'm doing my best.
Well, I must say, hearing all of that from my side of the fence, you think, wow, that is incredible. That is no small feat. Talk us through your work schedule. I'm really interested in that. I was just about to ask / thinking, your days don't start at 9 a.m.
No, no. Thankfully, it's actually not as early as it used to be. So the schedule's changed a bit. I used to have to get in at 4:30 or something. So I had to leave the house by 4. Now I don't actually have to be in there till 6. So that's not that bad, but I live an hour away from set. So I'm up usually around 4:30 and then I'm in the car by 5. Some days I cut it real fine. I jump in the shower and I'm going. Thankfully there's hair and makeup there, so I don't have to worry about how I look when I leave the house. And then yeah, most days I'm done on set by about 11 a.m. So that's the real beauty of it, is coming home and having the whole rest of the day. But generally I've had a really terrible night of sleep the night before. So I'm back coming home, trying to quickly jump into bed when I put Tide down and then have the afternoon with him.
Wow, that is a schedule and a half, that one, after waking up to then get up at 4:30 for the day. It's no small feat. So you say you don't do childcare yet. What does care look like on those days?
Oh, I'm so, so incredibly lucky. I have the most amazing in-laws. Like, you just couldn't even dream up better in-laws. I didn't know they existed. I didn't feel like people like this existed, but they are saints and my son loves them so much. And it gives me, it just takes the pressure off and makes me feel so much more relaxed about going to work, knowing that he is with people that he loves so much. Obviously, daycare isn't really an option for me with those hours because no one opens until 9 a.m. and some days I'm done by that stage. So I needed somebody who could come over at 5 o'clock in the morning, which is a really hard task. I have lined up a nanny to do some days because I can't expect them to do this all the time. It's really hard. And we've tried to work the schedule around my partner's days off. So some days he'll have Tide, other days it'll be the in-laws. But so far, that's how we've basically been managing. I've had a babysitter or a nanny a few times, but I've been lucky enough to have the in-laws, or my mum has flown in and stayed for a week or two and taken over when she's needed to. So yeah.
Village.
Yes. I can't express how lucky we are. But on the flip side of that too, is like, I have a lot of work coming up and there's afternoons, there's evenings, there's all kinds of things. And I can't expect that of my in-laws who aren't being paid and also have their retirement and their lives. So I'm deep in the throes right now of trying to find manageable care. And that is another thing I really didn't realize before having a baby, is how much it would cost. Yeah, the financial part of that, like there's certain times or jobs that I have to weigh up and go, is it worth it once I pay a nanny for this amount of hours for me to actually work? And a lot of the times the answer is no. And that really breaks my heart for a lot of families and people, because I don't know how we're supposed to feel encouraged to return to the workforce when it's just not set up in a way to support us. That the hours are one thing, and not everyone's hours are that. Like if you live an hour away from where you work, you're going to have to get care before daycare opens. And yeah, the cost is just insane. And I get it. I get why in some ways I understand why it is the way that it is, but yeah, I just don't see. And I know a lot of women who were really excited to get back to work. And so for them, the payoff for that was worth it for them. But for me, when I was already dragging my feet and not feeling ready to then pay that amount, I was like, it's not worth it.
Yeah. And all the mental gymnastics that comes around it, right? Like yes. It's not just those things, it's everything else around it.
Yeah.
It does take a village. I'm so glad that you have one. Yeah. How are you going to approach work towards the end of your pregnancy? As you say, you've got quite a few jobs coming up. You haven't been that well. You're just starting to come out of that. Yeah. What I'm getting at is, what have you learned with hindsight about how you need to look after yourself towards the end?
It's so funny you say that, because this pregnancy, I am not looking after myself. I have not done any of the things. I was just on a walk with a girlfriend this morning saying, this stage in my pregnancy last time, I was at Pilates 5 days a week, yoga 2 to 3 times a week, meditating twice a day, breath work, eating so well, like all of those things. I have not done an exercise class in months.
Well, I was the exact same and I still am, to be honest.
Yeah. I'm so lucky if I go for a walk. My son doesn't want to stay in the pram anymore, so the walks are out. So yeah, I'm not listening to myself the way that I did the first time, but I feel like I have an excuse, which is tied. I'm like, it's too much. It's too hard. And I keep saying, and I think this might be a little crazy, but I'm like, I just have to work. I have to work as much as I can for as long as I can, because I don't know how much time I'm going to take off this time. And financially, like, we need me to work.
It's almost investing in your postpartum. It's a shame, but you're probably thinking, if I earn more now, I can take more time later.
Exactly. And I think I am a little more ambitious this time, thinking I'll be able to do it. And I'm just pushing myself a lot more. But I think as the weeks go on, I'm going to just be told pretty quickly, already physically, my body's not holding up very well. I'm feeling like I was feeling at 30 weeks, at 19 weeks. Like, it's crazy how different the second time is. All the pains that came later have come way earlier. Being on my feet, I did a campaign shoot a couple of weeks ago and I was on my feet all day, and I feel like it took me days to recover from that physically. So I think in my head, the ideas that I have and all the things I want to do and I keep saying yes to leading up to the end of the year, I think at the moment they're a bit of a fantasy, and I'm probably going to get a little bit of a wake-up call. But I'm just going to try my philosophy right now is to just try and keep going until I can't go anymore. And yeah, just listen to my body, but also just see how far I can go. But I do feel like I'm probably going to need to wrap things up at least a month before. And I did that with Tide, was probably actually about 6 weeks before I went into labor. I stopped, and it was the perfect timing. And I loved that I got all that space and time. So I think around the same time, if I can manage, but I'm just going to listen to my body and see if it feels like sooner I need to call it, then I will.
And I could chat to you for hours, but Posey, speaking of making work work, she's on the floor next to me trying to chew on a cord. So I have one more question for you. I just realized, I was like, Jesus, this is bad parenting over here. My last question for you is, if you could go back and tell your new mum self one thing about the journey ahead, or what she was capable of, or, you know, giving her a pat on the back in those moments where she was a little bit shocked by new motherhood, what would you tell her?
Well, it's funny because the first thing that comes to mind is that I would tell her, this part is easy, it gets harder. But I don't think that's a good advice.
Just you wait.
Oh my gosh. One more. That is the worst. And it's.
Isn't that the worst?
But that isn't that funny that that's where my mind went to? Because if I had known then what I know now, oh my goodness. And this is what's so beautiful about getting to do it again, although doing it again with a toddler is very different, but is that I feel that I will just relax into it and I won't be so regimented about, oh no, but he needs to sleep now and he needs to do this now and rah, 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 rah. Like, I was so caught up on getting it right and being the perfect mum. And, you know, they're so adaptable and resilient, and it's okay if they miss a nap. It's okay, like, if they're not where you want them to be for that nap. And I think I would tell myself to take the pressure off and give myself some grace. And my partner constantly would tell me how wonderfully I was doing and how natural of a mom I was and all of those things. And I never believed him. And I think going back, I would take all that on and just relax and enjoy it and have fun with it a little bit more and just, yeah, go with the flow, because that's definitely not my style of parenting and definitely wasn't in those stages. So if I could do it all again, I would like to have a little bit more of a relaxed attitude around all of the things.
Those were beautiful parting words, and I can't help but laugh, sorry, because I've just pulled Posey up basically by the scruff of her poor sleep sack. Poor darling girl. I'm not amazing. The parenting thing today.
No, she's amazing. She's so quiet.
Oh, that's good. So the microphone's not picking up what I'm hearing.
No.
And then I'm actually at my parents' today because the energy is out at our house. And my dad just popped his head in. But the poor thing, I basically ignored him. He was probably trying to help me with Posey. So I'm very sorry about the racket that's going on here. But for anyone listening, it's never as linear as you think. Renee, I've loved hearing your story. Where can people find you online if they'd like to follow you?
My Instagram is at Renee Barge, and also started a podcast a few months ago called Mum Era Podcast. So, yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing.
Thanks, Lucinda. It was so nice chatting to you.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.